We all belong outside. We're drawn to nature, whether it's the recorded sounds of the ocean we doze off to or the succulents that adorn our homes. Nature makes all of our lives, well, better. Despite all this, we often go about our busy lives removed from it. But the outdoors is closer than we realize. With AllTrails, you can discover trails nearby and explore confidently. With offline maps and on-trail navigation, download the free app today and make the most of your summer with AllTrails.
Knowing how to speak and understand a new language can be an invaluable tool when traveling, meeting new friends, or just even to master a new skill. But it's not always simple when you're bogged down by textbooks and structure classes. That's why so many people trust Rosetta Stone. Rosetta Stone is the most trusted language learning program, available on desktop or as an app. It truly immerses you in the language you want to learn, like Spanish, French, Italian, Chinese, and more. You won't just be studying English translations. The Rosetta Stone intuitive process helps you pick up a language naturally, first with words, then phrases, then sentences. Don't put off learning that language. There's no better time than right now to get started. For a very limited time, listeners can get Rosetta Stone's lifetime membership for 50% off. Visit rosettastone.com/rs10. That's 50% off unlimited access to 25 language courses for the rest of your life. Redeem your 50% off at rosettastone.com/rs10 today.
Is your child struggling with a specific subject or need help with homework? Are they asking questions that you're not sure you can fully answer? IXL Learning is an online learning program for kids. It covers math, language arts, science, and social studies. IXL is designed. This program will improve your kids' grades. Studies done in almost every state in the country, the kids who had IXL are consistently doing better. Powered by advanced algorithms, IXL gives the right help to each kid no matter the age or personality. And it doesn't have to eat up all your time. One subscription gets you everything for all the kids in your home, pre-K to 12th grade. So don't miss out. 1 in 4 students in the U.S. are learning with IXL. IXL is used in 95 of the top 100 school districts in the U.S. Make an impact on your child's learning. Get IXL now. And listeners can get an exclusive 20% off IXL membership when they sign up today at IXL.com/audio. Visit IXL.com/audio to get the most effective learning program out there at the best price.
Hi, hello everyone. Welcome to Anime Initiative, the anime-focused show here at comicbook.com and Comic Book Nation. My name is Megan Peters. I'm your host, and I'm joined by my two good friends and co-workers, Evan Valentine and Nick Valdez, as always. What's up, guys?
Hey, everybody.
Hey. So I always have to ask, because if you don't watch the live thing, Nick always has some sort of slapping show on the back on this like awesome retro VHS TV. So what are we watching today, Nick?
This week, it's Pokemon the Movie 3.
Right as the title shows up. That's awesome.
One of my favorite movies, honestly. Honestly, I'm going to be distracted the whole time. This is bad. I'm going to have to ignore everything happening in your background.
See, it's why you got to watch the live streams, everybody. This is why.
I know, too. Watch some classic 4Kids entertainment, plus get some great anime news, because that's what we're here to do. We talk about all things anime, manga, animation, otaku, you know, basically anything we feel like talking about, we'll talk about it. We have a stacked show today. So we're going to kind of speed through this intro because we have a very busy news rundown. We're talking everything from JoJo's Bizarre Adventure to what I know is Evan's favorite series, Berserk. We also have Black Clover. And also we have a little bit of special news that went live this morning because Hatsune Miku, my queen, is joining the world of Magic the Gathering.
I know. For everyone.
Like they knew today was the podcast for us, and they said, you know what, let me give this kernel to Megan. After we go through our news rundown, we're going to take a quick break, and then we're going to be talking about something that is pretty unique to the fact that we know anime is huge. It's impacting Western culture and entertainment as we know it. Today, we got the season 2 trailer of My Adventures with Superman, a anime-inspired rendition on the DC superhero that we all know and love. Spoiler alert, the trailer slaps. So we're going to be talking about My Adventures with Superman and also talk about how anime is impacting essentially Western animation and entertainment. So that'll be a good one to go through. But first, we have to do it. Evan, tell me, what is going on with JoJo's Bizarre Adventure right now?
Okay, so over the past few days, there were rumors that everybody has been waiting for an anime adaptation of one of the best parts, arguably the best part of JoJo's Bizarre Adventure, known as Steel Ball Run. It was kind of, sort of, the rumors were that there was the chief animation director of Stone Ocean, the previous part of JoJo's Bizarre Adventure that was animated by David Production. The animator in question was, I just had their name in front of me, but, they had confirmed, they had sent out a social media post to their animators that said, that had a video of a person on horseback and said, just so you guys know, for some, just for the future, effectively, which was a giant tell that, oh, maybe they will be working on Steel Ball Run.
Because Steel Ball Run involves a bunch of horses and horses,
yes,
and all that kind of stuff, right?
That was effectively that. I will give the quickest of rundowns for what Steel Ball Run is. Steel Ball Run takes
30-second elevator pitch of Steel Ball Run. Go.
Steel Ball Run takes place in North America in the 1890s. It involves two characters, Johnny Joestar and Diego Brando, as they attempt to win their heart's desire by participating in a horse race where they are having stand battles on the horses the entire time. It is one of the greatest parts, if not the greatest part, of JoJo's Bizarre Adventure, because it has all of the things that you love about JoJo, while simultaneously as part of a horse race that never stops, and it's insane, it's amazing, and I can't wait to see it animated, because for me, it is my favorite part of JoJo's Bizarre Adventure.
Dude, there you, go. Yeah. You crushed that, honestly. What a pitch. All right, I practiced. Basically, what you're telling me, it's like my favorite parts of like Stardust Crusaders and everything.
Yeah,
but add in horse racing.
Yes, there are, and the stand battles. This is creator Hirohiko Araki at his finest in terms of creating absolutely amazing battles. The stands themselves are beyond creative. This was leveraged. Spoiler alert for Stone Ocean. One of the things that happened at the end of Stone Ocean, the previous part of JoJo's Bizarre Adventure that was animated, was that reality was rewritten by the villain Poochie, allowing Hirohiko Araki to create a whole new universe and do whatever he wanted, which is how we're able to have this story where we have Johnny Joestar, who's a variant of the Joestars, and we have Diego Brando, who is a variant of the villain Dio Brando, who really likes spheres that are a part of his whole story. It's amazing. I can't wait. The animation director has since recanted the fact that he's like, oh, this doesn't, nothing should be taken from the fact that I posted a video of a horse to my animators. Nothing has been confirmed.
It was an innocent horse. It was a coincidental horse.
Just very coincidental. Very, very coincidental. You're not fooling me, buddy. I know that you don't post a picture of somebody on horseback and you're not preparing to enter the world of Steel Ball Run. You can see online that JoJo fans are ecstatic for this, because aside from myself, many JoJo fans agree that this is the best part of JoJo's Bizarre Adventure, and seeing it animated will be something else. I can't wait for people to experience this.
Interesting. Well, I know traditionally animators have always talked about how difficult it is to animate horses. For a long time, you know, fans and industry insiders were always questioning, can Steel Ball Run even be done given the sheer amount of horses that have to be animated? But you know, it looks like even with this, you know, kind of, you know, refutation by the anime director, it looks like the team at David Production is cooking. If it takes a little bit longer than normal, that's fine. They have to animate like a gajillion horses. Look, I'm stoked. It's been a hot minute since Stone Ocean came through. And you know what? Hopefully we'll just see, you know, how Steel Ball Run shapes up, and whether or not its streaming method on Netflix kills all the excitement for it.
But please save JoJo Fridays, Netflix. Two things I wanted to mention about Steel Ball Run. One of the rumors that's been going on for a while is the idea, I know Megan, you had mentioned, like, how do you animate horses? One of the ideas is that they'll use kind of CG animation to do the horses specifically, kind of in a similar way as Dragon Ball Super Superhero did it and Attack on Titan with Studio MAPPA for its final season. On top of that, there have also been rumors, none of this has been substantiated, that David Production might be sharing animation responsibilities with another studio for this one, just because it would take a lot of work.
When we say it's hard to animate horses, I want to stress to you, it is really, really, you might not think about it, and you might be wondering why other animals aren't. It's something to do with, like, the way that their gait is when they walk, how their you know, legs move. It's really difficult to do, and it's really difficult to do in scale. So let's give the David Production team all the good vibes.
Because yeah, and the I must reiterate that this series takes place entirely on horseback. Johnny Joestar, a major part of his story is that he cannot walk, and one of the reasons why he's in this is to get the use of his legs back, so he is constantly on a horse throughout the entire thing. So that is, I do not envy the job of those animators, but I am looking forward to see what they do.
Well, with that said, we will see what happens next with JoJo, and we will hope we get some good, substantiated, official news on Steel Ball Run soon. But I'm also, Evan, because clearly this is your episode right
this
now.
This is a big episode for me.
Anime overlords, you know, as they were releasing news this week, said, I have Evan Valentine in mind. So all I know is Berserk is everywhere on my timeline right now, whether it's TikTok or Reddit or anything, because a fan made season 2 pitch for the 1997 Berserk anime is going viral. Tell me about it.
So as Berserk fans may or may not know, I mean, there hasn't been an anime adaptation since the disastrous 2017 Berserk.
And when we say disastrous, we mean disastrous.
It's rough, guys. It's rough out there for Band of the Hawk fans. Since the 2016-2017, the only thing that we've seen from Berserk is Berserk Memorial Edition, which was a compilation of the footage that was taken from the Berserk trilogy of feature-length films, cut up into a television series, and kind of brought to a number of streaming services. So a number of fan animators, almost like at the same exact time, I don't know if everybody coordinated this or not, but they took the opportunity to say, we're all going to take a crack at Berserk. And one of the recent ones was by Studio Arch, which is a fan studio that made the decision to kind of recreate the Berserk 1997 anime series, starting immediately where that original series has ended off. Continuing to follow Guts after the eclipse, taking place where he's the Black Swordsman in the real world, and he's trying to effectively get revenge on Griffith while surviving just an onslaught of demons in the bleakest, darkest anime world of all time. I thought they did an amazing job at really capturing not just the animation of it, but also the aesthetic of that original 1997 animated series, because one of the things that works so well about the 97 series, and this is up to debate, is the fact that it was able to capture the past creator of Berserk, Kentaro Miura's art, so well. And as a side note to both you, Megan, and Nick, Berserk's original animated series, the original anime series, was actually created in part by OLM, who is responsible for Pokemon. Two worlds.
You know what? I totally forgot about that. Look, we're wrapped. We are completely folding in Nick's anime choices for the day. So, I mean, I'll say this. Obviously, Berserk is massive. And unfortunately, it really kind of got a big global spotlight in the wake of Miura's passing, you know, and tragically. It's so wild to me, given... I mean, it's both wild and not wild to me, given how bad the last Berserk anime is. Like, I understand the hesitation for, you know, studios to come in and try to, you know, revisit the property, just given I mean, when I say that 2016 anime was raked over the coals, and for good reason. It was not good. The animation style, let alone the pacing and dialogue, was it was hard to bear. Yeah. But the 1997 Berserk anime, it's one of those, like, how the colors and the 2D animation works. It's so good. It's such, like, a raw, visceral kind of aesthetic that fits the manga so well. Like, this season 2 pitch, it really makes me want more Berserk as in terms of anime, which, and I'm not even the big fan of Berserk here on this show. I definitely, you know, have a respect for the series, but, you know, I don't come near your guru status of it.
Call from mom. Answer it. Call silenced.
Instacart knows nothing gets between you and the game. That's why they make ordering from your couch easy. Stock up today and get all your groceries for the week delivered in as fast as 30 minutes without missing a minute of the game.
You have 47 new voicemails.
Download the app to get free delivery on your first three orders while supplies last. Minimum $10 per order. Additional terms apply.
Imagine the softest sheets you've ever felt. Now imagine them getting even softer over time. That's what you'll feel with Boll & Branch's organic cotton sheets. In a recent customer survey, 96% replied that Boll & Branch's sheets get softer with every wash. Start getting your best night's sleep in these sheets that get softer and softer for years to come. Try their sheets with a 30-night guarantee, plus 15% off your first order at bollandbranch.com code Odyssey. Exclusions apply. See site for details.
This episode is brought to you by Shopify. Forget the frustration of picking commerce platforms when you switch your business to Shopify, the global commerce platform that supercharges your selling wherever you sell. With Shopify, you'll harness the same intuitive features, trusted apps, and powerful analytics used by the world's leading brands. Sign up today for your $1 per month trial period at shopify.com/tech, all lowercase. That's shopify.com/tech.
The 97 series is such a unique thing in terms of how the animation was done, and I cannot stress enough how many years of stories that they have not animated in any sense of the word. There are some of the best battles as well as some of the best moments that have yet to be brought to an anime. I mean, it's ironic that we start this off by talking about JoJo's Bizarre Adventure with David Production, because that's the same kind of thing that Berserk needs to be successful, is that it needs an anime studio that, number one, gets the assignment, and number two, is going to be in it for the long haul. That's just going to be able to, you know, I think we've had the Golden Age arc told, which is like the first big storyline of Berserk. I think we've had that told more times than we can count. We don't need to
revisit
it.
They keep adapting that one storyline. It's like, okay, all right, I get it.
Yeah, yeah. We all know at this point the story of it. But also, like, I always do point people to the manga because it's just so... It's the same thing as Junji Ito, the horror artist. It's so hard to adapt his work because it's so lovingly created. When I show people Kentaro Miura's panel work in Berserk's manga, like, I can't help but gush over it because it's so... he would spend weeks slaving over one pixel in an overall, like, spread of Berserk, and it just shows in everything that he did. Like, the world lost a serious talent when he tragically passed, but his friends, writer Koji Mori and the artists at Studio Gaga, are attempting to kind of continue the series and finally give us an ending to this series that has been going on since the 1980s. We are dying to see how this series comes to an end. And, you know, knock on wood, we one day get an anime that's able to do the original series justice. I know I'm crossing my fingers for it.
Absolutely. Well, hopefully when the series does reach its end, we get that adaptation. And speaking of another series and another manga that is slowly yet surely reaching its end point, for those who don't know, this week marks Golden Week in Japan. It is basically just a week filled with national holidays in Japan, one after the other and the other and the other. So, you know, there's a lot of celebrations going on in anticipation for the event. Shueisha, the publisher behind Shonen Jump, just released a ton of content and magazines to kind of get them out of the way. And in doing so, the latest issue of Jump Giga went live, where we got not one, but two chapters of Black Clover. Everybody, Asta, my sweet magical son, or non-magical son, depends on how you want to frame it, is back. Now, Nick, I know you've looked at the chapters. Can you give me a brief summary of what happens in these two chapters, 370 and 371?
Well, nothing really. So, okay, no, there's a, okay, like, there's a reason.
I love that. Truly, what an answer.
No, I mean, there's a reason we got two chapters this time around rather than the one, because the one we got last time a couple months ago is part of this new month, like, quarterly release schedule for the final arc. You know, that one was more significant. Asta learned how to use the Zetten technique, and because of that, he was able to now pass on a little bit of anti-magic to the rest of his Black Bull squad, and we got to see some of that in action as Lucius Agratis summoned, like, a bunch of clones of himself. And chapter 370 was basically setting up all those final fights. You see a bunch of the Black Bulls going to the various battlefields to take on the clones, and that was kind of the entire chapter 370. 371 is more significant, however. You have Mario Leona. I always have to stumble with her name because she's got, like, so many vowels in it. Mario Leona Vermilion. She's been fighting the Paladin Morris, and, you know, she's, although she's been just basically pure fire this whole time, like, quite literally, she's running out of mana, she's running out of basically hope, and as she reaches her limit, she gets the support of all her, like, fallen Crimson Lines squad members, and then breaks through her limit and unleashes a new ultimate magic, which kind of, like, revives all of their souls. So now, and they're all kind of, like, this pure mana fire, and then they're basically just burning through Morris's defenses. And 371 ends with Mary Leona, like, just kind of punching Morris to oblivion, to the point where he can't recover fast enough to, like, reform. So that's kind of where we're at. Like, it's two chapters of a lot of setup. You get one payoff, but it's sort of like nothing's really significant yet. Like, it's not like these are all still the side battles ahead of, like, the big finale. So this is it's not even the side battles we're most, like, curious about. You know, it's not Noelle's fight with her mother, and it's not stuff like that. So it's just like, yeah, this is a good little quarter. I'm glad we got two chapters, because if we just got one where it was all the setup, I'm pretty sure people would feel disappointed, which is probably why it was a double release. So I guess now we just wait a couple more months to see what the next, like, little setup is, what the next little side battle. And that was kind of Black Clover's pace in the weekly release schedule. So, you know, the fact that we're getting it now just quarterly, it's like, cool.
I mean, as you being, you know, this company's, and also, you know, in my life, the biggest Black Clover stan that I know. I mean, do you feel like the release schedule for the manga is working now that it has moved to Jump Giga? I mean, to be clear, the creator Yuki Debata moved because he wanted, you know, a better production schedule for his health and, you know, to be able to spend time with his family. I mean, you know, the man has, you know, a kid, he has a wife, he has, you know, he has a life beyond Black Clover. So, like, absolutely live your best life, man. I'm all for, you know, taking care of yourself in whatever profession you do. But in doing so, do you feel like Black Clover has sacrificed anything in moving to this kind of quarterly release schedule?
I do think so. It's a little bit of column A, column B, in that, you know, I'm so glad that the creator is now working at a better pace, because the art is just fantastic. Like, there are so many little details in these pages now. And Black Clover, if you haven't read the manga, you're just watching the anime, you're really kind of missing out on some, like, some of the most gorgeous spreads you'll ever see in manga. And so these new chapters since this release schedule have clearly shown that he's been able to kind of add these little finer details and finer things to make it really pop. But on the other hand, it still has the same pacing as the weekly chapters, just a bit extended. Like, instead of a 10-page chapter per week where we kind of get set up, we got 20 pages of setup in that same pace. It's like, you know, the Black Clover's a very fast series. Battles end within like very few chapters. And so you kind of ruin that pace by making us wait for a couple months for the next one, for the next one, for the next one. So it really just depends on how many more chapters we actually have left. Like, if it really is, we only have like 4 or 5 left, then I would understand, you know, mm-hmm. like every chapter gives us the end of a fight. Cool. That's it. All right. But as it stands now and what I'm seeing develop with each one, it's like, well, I don't know, maybe you should have just did like a monthly release schedule or something, because this quarterly kind of sucks. So
maybe it could have gone to V-Jump. Well, I mean, looking at the pacing after reading the 2 chapters, I totally agree with you. The pace of Black Clover is very much, you know, hurry up and wait. It's like, all right, like,
yeah,
wait for a really long time. And then all of a sudden, like one chapter, like 40 different things happen.
Yes.
And it feels yes. like a weird form of payoff when you can get it quarterly. I mean, it's and this is just my personal belief based on how I'm tracking the pacing at this point. Like, I feel like it's going to take 3 more years for Black Clover to finish its current at its current pace, with all of the fights it has set up, both kind of side fights and kind of main fights at, and then once it hits its climax, it also needs to come down and finish. Yeah. So we'll see. But we do have 2 new chapters of Black Clover out. You can check them out on the Manga Plus service, the website, or through the Shonen Jump app. So with that said, we have 2 more quick pieces of news before we go into our deep dive. One I already talked about because I'm too excited. Hatsune Miku has come into the world of Magic the Gathering, bringing 2 my biggest interest into one, which I think is amazing, because for those who don't know, Magic the Gathering has a kind of this thing that it does called Secret Lair. And these Secret Lairs are basically campaigns where Magic the Gathering collaborates and makes cards in, you know, conjunction and tandem with other franchises. So they've done The Walking Dead, which, you know, had mixed reception. But then there were other things like Stranger Things, you know, there was Lord of the Rings, and more recently we had Fallout. And my husband was so game for Fallout. I've listened to nothing but Magic the Gathering discussions because of the Fallout Commander decks and stuff that they recently released for Secret Lair. Well, now it's my turn, because Hatsune Miku, I have no idea why they picked Hatsune Miku, but my queen Vocaloid is now getting her own Secret Lair collaboration with Magic the Gathering. It has a bunch of different art, which is really interesting. It's so weird to see Hatsune Miku done in like quote unquote traditional MTG card art style. But yeah, the team behind Wizards and Magic the Gathering announced it today that Hatsune Miku, essentially the idea is like, in this Secret Lair collaboration, she's taking a world tour in the universe of Magic the Gathering. Which is insane. It's insane.
Yeah, I love that. I love
can't
that.
Tell
yeah.
you how insane it is as me that. Seeing Hatsune Miku in Magic the Gathering. Truly, like, Fallout made sense to me, you know? Like, most of the things Magic the Gathering has done, even like when it did like some of the alt art with like Godzilla and everything, like, it has all made sense. Hatsune Miku is the first Secret Lair that I have looked at and been like, don't understand. There's such little frame of reference. But it's official. The cards will be on sale very shortly. I will absolutely be getting any and all the cards that are available. But this question has led me to one. Well, now that we have Hatsune Miku as a Secret Lair collaboration, kind of opens the door. It gives us a little bit of wiggle room to get some anime collaborations. So what other anime series do we think would fit with Magic the Gathering here?
I mean, like we just mentioned two of them at the top of the show, right? And that don't have their own card games already, like JoJo's Bizarre Adventure and Berserk, right? Like,
can you imagine Berserk cards and MTG?
Yeah, I feel like that's kind of like a match made in heaven, you know. Well, mm-hmm. not in Berserk's case, but you know,
not so much for that one. I think that,
yeah,
I can't remember if it was official, but I remember that Junji Ito did something.
He did Pokemon cards. Junji, oh, see, I was gonna say. Sorry, I just got way too excited in my mind. Junji Ito, he only did maybe three or four cards of like Bayonet and Gengar and Gastly.
Gengar, yep.
Like, as you know, Pokemon cards, and they were all promo art cards and stuff like that. They weren't like, you know, really usable. Junji Ito Magic the Gathering cards would both slap and terrify me.
That would be, oh man, those would be so scary.
Like, how would I even play? Like, I'd have to be like, I can't do this.
I can't look at it.
I cannot face this right now. But yeah, Hatsune Miku, my ever-present Vocaloid queen, is coming to Magic the Gathering. I'm ecstatic. You should be ecstatic. If you have never played Magic the Gathering, may this be an outlet for you to try. I played a lot when I was in middle school, and then I kind of got off the train. I really got into Pokemon. And more recently, I've been into the One Piece trading card game. So now it feels like I'm really trying to catch up with MTG because so much has changed. But yeah, that's where we're at. Hatsune Miku. I hope everyone is as excited as I am. And speaking of One Piece, we have an official anime cafe collaboration in the United States for like the Yay. First time. For those who do not know, One Piece just opened its collaboration cafes that it has done in Japan. And it's also done it in Australia. It's done it in a couple other countries. It's finally in America. It is open in Las Vegas, Nevada. It's for a limited time. You get, you know, plenty of One Piece themed goodies there. But this is like one of the first times that we've had a big anime cafe collaboration pushed into the United States. These happen all the time in Japan, as well as, you know, in areas in China, Taiwan, South Korea, Thailand. There are a bunch of these collaborations that happen with cafes, and I've seen plenty of them, and they're really cool, but they very rarely bring them to America. So we have One Piece here. So I need to know now from you two, which other anime cafes do we need here in America?
Oh man, I would like to add that one of the worst parts of our job is that we have to consistently see all the cool stuff that Japan gets that we don't here in North America. Just the
constant stuff.
The constant steady stream of cafes. Japan has used to have the Walking Gundam. It has their Universal Studios is entirely anime based versus ours, which like doesn't. Yeah, I mean, it has Super Mario World, which is pretty cool, but they have that too. And so,
and more, they already have the Donkey Kong stuff there. So,
Yeah, they already have all that. So, like, what in terms of what other, I mean, there are unofficial like Dragon Ball cafes in America.
Oh,
I
yeah, there's that works. Tons of unofficial ones for sure.
There's tons of unofficial ones, but having like an official one, I always was a fan. I mean, I would love a Gundam cafe. The Gundam cafes seem really cool. There's whatchamacallit? What are some? I mean, obviously Tokyo Ghoul seems like the perfect one that's made for a cafe.
Yeah, I mean, I was gonna joke, you know, keeping up the bit, I would also say Berserk, you know, keeping up the joke.
Don't make a Berserk cafe. Don't make that. There's no good food in Berserk. It's all terrible. It's all horrible.
I would
be
scared. I feel like they would, like, whatever food I was getting, they would take it out and, like, butcher it in front of me. Like, it would be terrifying.
Will you sacrifice your friends to not pay the paycheck? I don't know.
Oh, my God.
Maybe. How pricey was this? Yeah, maybe.
Maybe.
Like, I'll say when I've been in Japan, I've been to a couple of the cafes they've had over there. I've done a Pokemon cafe in Japan. I didn't get to go to the Gundam cafe, unfortunately. I think two different Final Fantasy cafes, and those were really cool. I'll say this. They're not doing it at this cafe for One Piece, but at the Universal Studios Japan you know, in their pavilion, they have like a one piece area. And in the summer, they open Sanji's restaurant and they just have Sanji or somebody who's like cosplaying as Sanji, or maybe it actually is Sanji. I have no idea. Who knows? He's out like talking to guests and serving food, like doing all this cool stuff for me, especially because I am so deeply entrenched in my One Piece era right now.
Right. Yeah.
Sanji to serve me food. Come on. Like I want this One Piece cafe to go one step further. But it also, man, a Sailor Moon cafe, I would just probably cry the whole time, especially if they had the Sailor Scouts there. I would just be so like in awe. I wouldn't know what to do. Also, a very obvious pick for me would be Oran High School Host Club. I know that will never happen because that. I was like,
do you just want a host cafe?
Yeah. They do have the
so long ago. But hey, if Fruits Basket can make a comeback, so can Oran High School Host Club, and I can get.
Yeah, we've seen wilder revivals, so you know,
truly
it's on the table.
We have. Truly, no truer words have been spoken before. So, One Piece Cafe is open. You can go visit it in person for a limited time if you are in the Las Vegas area. I fully admit I have Google mapped how long it would take me to drive there. It's not doable, but you know what? I've considered it. So that's all of our news rundown for the day. We're going to take a quick break to pay for the show. But when we come back, we are going to be doing our deep dive into My Adventures with Superman and the influence anime is having on Western entertainment. So stay tuned.
Another day is here and you're ready for it. What to wear? Check. Breakfast, lunch, and dinner? Check. Planning for what's next and how to save for it? That's where Bank of America can help. For your financial to-dos, Bank of America has experts ready to help get you closer to your goals. Get started at one of our local financial centers or 24-7 in our mobile banking app. Find a location near you at bankofamerica.com/talktous. What would you like the power to do? Mobile banking requires downloading the app and is only available for select devices. Message and data rates may apply. Bank of America NA, member FDIC.
Hey, it's Kaylee Cuoco for Priceline. Ready to go to your happy place for a happy price? Well, why didn't you say so? Just download the Priceline app right now and save up to 60% on hotels. So whether it's Cousin Kevin's Kazoo Concert in Kansas City, go Kevin! Or Becky's Bachelorette Bash in Bermuda, you never have to miss a trip ever again. So download the Priceline app today. Your savings are waiting.
Go to your happy place for a happy price. Go to your happy price, Priceline.
Hello and welcome back to Anime Initiative, the place where we talk all things anime for comicbook.com. It is now time for our deep dive, where I have been so excited to get to this point because we got the official trailer for My Adventures with Superman Season 2 today. And it slaps. It's so good. Nick, can you please walk me through the insanity that is this trailer?
Yes, My Adventures with Superman Season 2 officially premieres on May 25th. It's a Saturday. It is now officially going to get folded into the Toonami lineup. I know Season 1 was like airing on Fridays and then would have like repeat broadcasting on Toonami or Sunday or something like that. But it looks like with Season 2 here, it is firmly set within Toonami. That's not been totally confirmed, but the Saturday broadcast kind of confirms it. You know, so yes, it will premiere on May 25th at midnight with the first two episodes. So it will be a back-to-back episode premiere. And then we'll be releasing at a weekly pace after that, with the episodes then being available to stream with Max the next day, just like Season 1. And so Season 2, where we left off with Season 1 was Clark, you know, Clark's really getting into his Superman bag and like he's kind of dealing with the first real issues of like catching the government's attention. And that was kind of the whole final climax of the first season. And so Season 2 is picking up on that with like even more troubles, more characters, more DC Comics villains who are getting remakes and makeovers. There are confirmations of theories from the first season that fans had. Like there was a character named Alex in the first season that people were like, oh, is that Lex Luthor? And then in the trailer, he's like, I'm Lex Luthor. So it's like, well, there goes that. Right? So,
confirmed.
Yeah. So Luthor is confirmed. We get the first shot at Kara Zor-El, which is Supergirl, but we don't really know how they're going to do that new interpretation of her. You know, it looks like she does wear the same kind of Superman outfit, but we'll see. Like, My Adventures with Superman, one of the great things about it is that they are not afraid to change up things from the comics and change up things from other animated interpretations. So we're kind of like, even though we have an idea of where things will go or what villains Superman can face, it's still very much up in the air because this is a fresh and modern interpretation of Superman. And so season two is just going to continue more of that. And I can't wait to see it. Like, it was originally picked up for two seasons anyway, but still seeing the season two production confirmed at the end of season one was still like, oh, okay, we can breathe. You know, like, yes, they are making more. Don't worry. But like, now is the real test. Now here is the real test for it.
To me, it is so, so incredibly wild that there's like a Superman anime. I still boggle around with it. Obviously this is a production that is made, ordered at least by, you know, studios here in America, but it is produced by Studio Mir, which is a studio from South Korea. You'll be familiar with them from Avatar: The Last Airbender and The Legend of Korra. So this is another one of those kind of, you know, anime series or anime inspired, whatever you want to call it. If you've not seen My Adventures with Superman, whether or not you're a Superman fan at all, like, this is the show to get you into Superman. And I say that with my whole chest. I've always been partial to the Superman character, you know, at least more so than I have to Batman, but, you know, consistently, you know, not just in Western entertainment, but globally, you know, Batman has kind of been a championed character. And this production, My Adventures with Superman, the way that they tackle Clark, it really gets into what I love so much about anime in general, or, you know, the way that kind of adult animation handles these complex superhero characters and mythos. I mean, it does it very much like almost in a similar way as like My Hero Academia. And like, it really is breaking down the character of Clark Kent and, you know, his allies that just like make me within the first 10 minutes of episode one be like, cool, I'm so deeply invested into this character. You know, that's just that's on the writing, that's on the pacing, that's on, you know, the people that are bringing this show to life. Then we have it paired with some really innovative animation. Like, it's so good. Evan, what is your thoughts on this show?
So I am a giant Superman fan. I have a a giant mural behind my screen of Superman. Superman is one of my favorite superheroes. So no pressure. So I'm a giant fan of Superman, and I have been for a really long time. And when I heard about this project initially, I was just like, oh, cool, he's getting another animated series. This show took me by surprise in that it is able to, as both you, Megan, and Nick said, it is able to inject a lot of new things into the Superman mythos while also sticking very close to the character in a way that we haven't seen from a lot of interpretations of him. I think that one of the things that I love so much about Superman is the fact that he's not grimdark, as it were. Like, he's the opposite of Berserk, effectively. He's
you're a very complicated connoisseur, you know.
Very, very complicated. He arrives on the scene, and he presents himself as kind of something of a guiding light for mankind. Like, you can aspire to be this. When he arrives and there's a room full of superheroes, they all stop and are in awe of this guy who, you know, saves cats from trees, and he tries to find the best way to fix a situation that doesn't necessarily involve punching someone. And this series kind of gets into that, because there were numerous scenes in the first season where, you know, especially I think he was fighting Parasite at one point, and he's just like, we don't have to fight. We can find a different way to do this. I mean, of course, they end up fighting anyway, but
naturally,
naturally. But they're able to capture the spirit of the character so well while making some really ingenious changes to the mythos. And I wanted to add, because actually, as I was watching the season two trailer, something that I noticed, and I'm sure I'll write about later today, is that they do have the appearance of what appears to be a parademon, which is, for those who are Superman and DC fans, know that that means that Darkseid is coming, or could be hinting at Darkseid, or
I know, which, you know, we've seen that before in, you know, the larger Hollywood mythos, and it's up to you on how you, if you enjoyed it or not. But you know, we'll see if my adventures with Superman gets to that point. Like, the thing that I always find so interesting, and as we kind of shift the conversation to talking about how this production, this, you know, this show is so heavily inspired, you know, by anime, and it takes anime and it blends that kind of traditional styling with, you know, Western, you know, franchises and characters, is, I didn't get into My Adventures with Superman off the bat. It wasn't until somebody on Twitter said, My Adventures with Superman is basically DC's version of Pretty Cure, that I went, what? And then I watched it and I went, this is the most Sailor Moon kind of series. I am a massive fan of Sailor Moon. Just the way that the characters are broken down, the ensemble cast, the stories. You know, we could talk about that forever. But one thing that I think is incredibly interesting with My Adventures with Superman is it has really kind of blended that conversation of where people look at shows like The Legend of Korra and Avatar: The Last Airbender. And the fight and the debate begins of, is it an anime? Is it not an anime? Is it animation? Is it a cartoon? Like, that conversation, I don't think will ever die. But most people are looking at My Adventures with Superman and they're looking at it and they recognize it as something distinctly anime. So, I mean, the thing is like, there's so much contention and conversation around the validity of the existence of Western anime, whether that's a thing or not. And I wanted to ask, like, what are y'all's opinion on that? Wow, I just got really Southern. I'm so sorry. That y'all was really pronounced. What opinion do you guys have on it?
Yeah, because anime is just animation. Like, regardless of, you know, yes, anime, like, I think as we, you know, as we continue to evolve as anime, as a fandom, you know, because the medium is wider than ever, it's more widespread. Like, this is just kind of like the tip of the iceberg, right? In terms of, you know, anime influence and reach. And as those, as it evolves, it kind of, we kind of also need to let go of those past designations, right? Because anime, you know, you'll have dedicated hardcore fans going, oh, well, it's got to be produced in Japan. That's what makes it anime. Yes, that kind of used to be true. But then you had companies like Adult Swim here who are like straight up going, no, well, we're producing original anime series. Oh, well, you know, it's a Western company, but they're working with Japanese studios, or like here, where it's a Western company, but they're working with studios like Studio Mir. And it's like, well, so now you just kind of like have to evolve and be like, well, if it's animation, it's anime. It's all kind of like, that's all kind of the same thing. It all just kind of means animation. And to me, you know, it's something we still kind of have to fight with here, even at comicbook.com. You know, like, this is something that, you know, us three know better than anyone that, well, if it's a cartoon, it's just going to be anime. That's all it is. Like, it's just animation. And the sooner we kind of accept that, the better. I think it's okay to just categorize it all as anime, because it's animation, you know, like, it just stop separating it by region. And, you know, it, cause then it starts, you know, some of those arguments get a little xenophobic and it turns into that kind of thing where it's like, no, just if it wants to be an anime, and if it calls itself an anime, if it's very clearly anime inspired, it's anime. I once again, I'm just gonna say, who cares?
what's your position, Evan?
I agree with Nick, like 100%. I think that, like, especially with, you know, there will always be the debate. I think that you will never get a more heated debate on whether or not Avatar The Last Airbender counts as an anime. I think that we are going to be arguing that until the day that we die. But I think that, like, with, you know, kind of like Nick said, there's the idea that, like, anime is animation. I think that that's a good argument to have. I think that there's an aesthetic that anime has that can be seen in productions that, even if they don't necessarily take place in Japan or they weren't necessarily made in America, I think, like, especially with stuff that Netflix has been creating, whether that's like the Castlevania series or Blood of Zeus or, you know, a bunch of other things, like, you can safely say that those are anime. And especially like with My Adventures with Superman, you don't necessarily think of it in the same vein as like DC Animation's original Superman series or Justice League or Batman the Animated Series. It most certainly falls under like the category of anime. And at the end of the day, like, if somebody wants to call something an anime, just that's I think that's fine. I think, like, right? You know, if it falls like, under that, like, definition. Yeah.
Like, for me, it's so interesting because a lot of the conversation comes down to like a shifting vocabulary. You know,
yes.
There are things traditionally in language that we continue to, you know, talk about, you know, in language, because it evolves and the way that terminology is used is like change. Like, I mean, everyone jokes about the way that literally is the most overused word in the world, literally, but the definition of that word has changed because of its usage. And so the way that anime is being used, I feel like, has predominantly become a way that, given the globalization of the medium over the past 20 years, a lot of the people who are creating animated titles, whether it's in America or they're in, you know, Europe, if they're in South America, you know, globally, you know, they are taking these pieces of content that they grew up with, whether they grew up watching Evangelion or Gundam or Dragon Ball, and they are infusing that into the content that they're making, which starts to make anime a really globalized kind of process. I mean, we started to see the beginning of that with Avatar The Last Airbender in terms of kind of, you know, mainstream popularity. And in the last 10 years, anime has blown up. I mean, it is massive in terms of global sales, and the same goes for manga. So the fact that we're seeing this kind of, you know, globalization and this, you know, back and forth of these, you know, cultures and artistic styles borrowing from one another isn't surprising, because, you know, you know, if you want to go back and look in at the history of anime and animation in Japan, it's been around for so long, decades and decades and decades. But what we kind of know as quote unquote modern anime really kind of got a kickstart back during World War II, during the unfortunate, you know, waves of occupation across the globe. A lot of cartoons and characters like Betty Boop were being introduced to Japan that had been isolated for so long. You know, they started to take in this content and they made it their own. So I think there's definitely the argument for keeping something culturally, you know, preserved and giving credit to where credit is due to a culture for what they have done in creation of anime. But now it is being taken and, you know, evolving into such a massive thing. Like with My Adventures with Superman is one of the key examples. You look at something like what Warner Brothers is doing over on Max with Ninja Kamui, like that's a huge show for them, and it's kind of one of those productions that's come together from a Western place ordering this series that's being fulfilled by a studio, you know, in Korea and Japan. This conversation and this debate, I hesitate to call it an argument because I feel like there's really no right answer. it's an evolving situation that is evolving in tandem with the growth of anime globally. And I think that's awesome, truly. I mean, it's super cool. As somebody who has been invested in this industry for, you know, decades now, it's really cool to see it reach this point, because for so long, you know, you would say anime, or you would talk about something that was anime and it was like a meme or like a joke, or you were like making fun of yourself by bringing it up. But now it's like, No, it's just, it is a very valid form of entertainment and a very valid medium. So with My Adventures of Superman, like, I want more. I want more of My Adventures of Superman. I want to see more content like that come forward.
Yeah, this is even before factoring in other countries, right? Like, this is
I mean, it's this definition. Global.
Yeah, like, this is definition is being argued between, like, North American and Japanese kind of, you know, sensibilities. But what happens when, you know, you have French comics adapted, like Radiant? Mm-hmm. You know, Radiant was a French comic that was adapted into an animated series. Is that still an anime? Yes. And then you have series like Solo Leveling, the hugest release of, like, the winter of the year so far. Korean comic. So, like, that's the thing. It's like, you know, when you adapt those, do you not call them anime because of, you know, their source material? And it's like, when you start picking at the little things like that, it's just easier to just be like, well, you know, as long as you don't homogenize everything, like Megan was saying, as long as you avoid the wide homogenization of, you know, the, I guess, anime aesthetic or something like that along those lines, as long as you avoid that, like, you should be fine just calling stuff anime. It's animation.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, it's such a complex issue. It was an excellent point what you just said. Depending on where you're arguing it from, it's different. Because there's a lot of people that, you know, when I've been in Japan speaking with people, or when I'm, you know, looking through, you know, Twitter in Japan and reading what netizens over there talking about, I mean, like, they call, like, there was a really popular thread on, you know, X or Twitter, whatever you want to call it, in Japan recently, that was talking about how Family Guy is an anime. It was like, I had to do like a double take. I was like, what is this? And then, you know, there was kind of that whole delineation again. So this argument is one that is kind of ever brewing. And, you know, our positions will change over the years. But, you know, shows like My Adventure with Superman are really just kind of showing just the vast kind of recognition and validity that anime is getting. You know, the show, you know, very literally takes from shows like Pretty Cure. It takes from Kill la Kill, Sailor Moon, Dragon Ball. You know, it is using these things to filter itself and become really successful as an animated title. And, you know, we're only talking about animation, you know, from a Western perspective. That's not even talking about the ways that anime has influenced live action entertainment. That's another episode. Because we're running out of time. But, you know, it's definitely decisive. But, you know, any final thoughts from either of you two on the topic?
So completely unrelated, but this is Superman related. I had to give a shout out to the trailer, the end of the trailer, having something that I think is that a lot of media that focuses on comic books specifically doesn't have. And this is something that we've seen a lot in James Gunn's DCU, is that whenever they release something, and I saw this at the end of the My Adventures of Superman season 2 trailer, it gives you a number of comic books to read, which I love seeing that, because being able to say, if you like this, read the comics, is something that I feel like Marvel really, like, I love the MCU, but I feel like the MCU never really took advantage of that, where it was like, if you love Thor in this, you can read a story about him in this. And DC's doing that, and I love it.
Kind of perfectly ties back into our conversation here, because what is anime if not an advertisement for a manga or a source material? So, hey, there you go, Evan. You found a way.
I somehow brought it all together.
Inadvertently, My Mission of Superman said, what if comic books were manga? We advertise them? I love it. I love it so much. Obviously, this is a massive topic to kind of untangle and discuss. And, you know, we want to know what you think about it. So if you guys have, anyone who's listening has opinions on kind of anime and how it is impacting, you know, not just Western animation and media, but globally, we want to hear what you want to say. We love the conversation. So please feel free to drop us a comment wherever you listen to your favorite podcast, which should hopefully be this podcast. You know, whether it's on Spotify or Apple Podcasts, just leave us a review. We'll look over them. We will read them on air and go over your lovely words. Or if you just want to talk to us personally, you can find each of us on social media. You can find me online at Megan Peters, CB. Nick, where can they find you?
You can find me at Valdizology on all the socials.
And Evan, where are you at?
And you can find me at EV Comedy on all the socials. And please talk with me about Superman. I will talk with you forever about Superman.
Talk about him. Talk about Superman with Evan, and then just immediately go into like your darkest theory about Berserk and just give him a look. No. Just send him spiraling. I will look forward to it. But that is our show for the day. Thank you for listening to Anime Initiative. If you want even more geeky news, comicbook.com has an array of shows. Obviously, we have our tried and true Comic Book Nation, but we also have the Pull List for comic books, and we have Quick Save for gaming. We have a Pokemon podcast if you want to listen to me talk about Vaporeon way too much. And we have Phase Zero, which is our Marvel show. So until next week, we'll see you then.